Welcome to Ballsy, the podcast where I interview successful artists and creators on how they got the balls to sell their art and turn their practice into a profitable business. As a former entrepreneur turned artist, I realized that being an artist is basically like running a small startup, and you, the artist, are the CEO. I talk to artists about their businesses, talk real numbers, growth hacks, tools and tricks, and how they were ballsy enough to make that their career. I just realized I didn't press record. Oh, it was such a good story. All right, we're going back. All right, hold on. We're going to do the last 5 minutes again. Sorry about that. It's going to be one of those days where I'm going to go with it. I'm going to own it. All right. So how did you get started before you were an artist? What did you do?
So I was a plumber, bartender, waiter.
Okay. And you were a plumber. And so when you were a plumber, how did you decide to go from being a plumber to creating art?
When I got my first apartment, I actually had big walls and I needed art for the walls. I said, I'll do it myself. And it was quite frankly fun to do it. And it was not great art. I used whatever I had with me. I glue pipe of PVC on the painting. I hang painting in the middle of the living room. I just had fun with it. And yeah, I probably like made 15, 20 paintings like that, but like pretty big. And I think my ex-girlfriend at that time, she kept everything. It's very shitty.
I was going to say, do you still have pictures? Do you have pictures of these somewhere?
I have hidden somewhere.
Yeah. I always like to go back to see like what the original work was. So you're now a plumber. You started to make some art in your house. When did you decide to realize that you could sell art or realize that was even a possible career? What was it doesn't sound like you have a formal art education. What was the transfer like?
Not at that time. For me, at that time, I didn't see any potential financially to make a career out of it. Also, at that time, we're talking about 20 plus years ago when internet was just starting. So no social media, very light internet. Dealing with Gary, the pimp, like I call them. Not all of them now because we work with Gary. They're very nice and honest people, but the big player. Yeah, for me, the big player, the Gargosian, all those people, they fucking pimp. So I just did it really by passion. And it took much more in my story to end up doing this as a career.
Okay, so that's what I'm really fascinated by. What were the steps that you took and what were the inflection points where you decided that you could quit your job being a plumber and decide that you could go and sell your art for a living?
It's not a decision like that. It's not one day I wake up and I'm like, I'm going to quit everything and I'm going to be an artist. For some, it's the path. It wasn't mine. Me, just natural. I got the opportunity to come to LA as a plumber working for a shitty company. And I didn't speak English. And I went, so I just left everything. I had 2 weeks. So I quit. I left the girlfriend. I was like 3.5 years with her. So I broke up with her. Left out the apartment, the furniture, the car, everything. I left. And I came here in LA. And when I arrived in LA, I needed an apartment. And I had no money and I didn't speak English. And I met Thierry Guetta, which became Mr. Brainwash. And he was remodeling some apartment that he had. And I made a trade with him. I fixed the apartment, give me free rent. And then I started, since he was French, we started to hang out a little bit together. At that time, he was filming people around, like he was filming like fashion designer and street artist. And then I started to work one afternoon with him, another afternoon, and then he became weekly. And I started to film with him, all those street artists, Space Invader, Cows, all those people, when they were not that big, when it was not like it was a thing, but like underground thing. And then we start to try to make art ourselves. And then we started to do the Mr. Brainwash thing. And we hit the street like crazy every night for like many years. And then we build them up. And 15 years later, I decide to start my own thing on the side. And it's been no less than maybe no more than a year that I completely stopped to work with them. and focus only on my thing. Really? So there's
Until I researched you, I didn't realize you worked with Terry. I know him through a friend of mine who was his attorney. So you were going out with him when he was filming like Exit Through the Gift Shop. What?
Yeah, I'm in it actually.
So you were there through all the Exit Through the Gift Shop. So you were in the streets. So you were doing the real, like.
You can see me in the movie. Many times actually.
Really? Okay, now I have to watch the movie again.
Yeah, I didn't look like that.
So you basically were there at the beginning of like all this really interesting, the blossoming of all the street art. So you're now, and now did Terry pay you? Was this like a job or was this like something you did on the side?
No, I started to get money. When I met him, Mr. Brenner didn't exist. I started to work in his guest house, in the back of his backyard, making stencil and creating paste and getting ready to go out at night and kill the street. I was with him when Banksy did his show. I was out in the street doing pencil with Banksy. I witnessed Shepard Fairey doing his thing at his prime. I went to Space Invader house in Paris, at his father's house in the garage where they were making the books with the mosaic. Yeah, I got lucky. I went to the studio of Cause. I went to Tron English. I got lucky to witness all those people early on.
Yeah, from the ground floor, before they were people. When there was no internet, like when there was no cell phone, when just because.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be great if
what
I
a, had what a,
like, hashtag this, hashtag that. Just kidding.
Yeah, but let me tell you, I don't think it wouldn't have existed the way it did had technology. The fact that it wasn't recordable except for Terry and you making movies, it was like the fact that you captured that history, the fact that history was captured at all at that time frame is a blessing and a miracle. So you have this really debatably one of the more awesome ways to get into the art world, like literally by accident. Obviously you had some creative bent, but then you get stuck basically seeing all the most amazing artists in the world. At which point during this journey were you making your own art the entire time? And like, at what point did you decide to push your art into the world economically, financially?
To be honest with you, I was feeling I was making my own art, if that makes sense. I had this whole vision about marketing, about how he built himself as an artist, his fascination for celebrities and icon and things like this. And I had a feeling for design and for the rawness of street art and graffiti for that style. So basically, I give him the style and he implements the icon on it. So when I was doing art with it, it was all from my guts. I was not like somebody telling me do this, do that. It was just like, so I felt I was doing my own, but then.
So it was your creativity?
Yeah, it is creativity. It's just like you're doing what you do. It's how can I point this out? I don't know. For me, I give him the style. He brought the sense, the message, the value. He's the soul and the blood of his career. But I definitely gave him that style that everybody is copying right now, to be honest with you. Not that I want to do the big ego shit, but all that splash graffiti mixed with stencil, with dripping paint. And it's just because at that time, I don't have a background in art. And I took this as if you, like when you do punk music, like you just use whatever you know best and you don't give a shit about rules and you just mix it up. And that was my vision and my way of making art with him at that time. And then when I realized that it became so big that my personal was getting taken away from me, I was like, that's time for me to do something that I can, how you call it, like reclaim on.
You call your own.
Yeah. Right.
You were stuck in the shadow and it was time for you to take your work and let it stand by itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, so when did you, so in this process, you're now in this machine that's going. When did you start, like, when did you sell your first piece of art? When did someone was like, I'm buying your art, as opposed to his art?
I think when you started, because I witnessed Terry's start. I was there when we sold the first painting. I know where, I know who. Usually, from my experience, people, they want to help you, basically. It's not like you put a piece in a gallery and somebody like fall in love with it and buy it. It can. But in my story, it's like friends around us, they want to support, they see the hustle, and they're like, I believe in what you do, and I'll buy you the first painting and stuff like that. For me, it was like somebody from our entourage that bought three pieces.
Okay.
And then after, things take time.
Yeah, of course. Did that give you the bug? Did you say, oh, fuck, now I can sell my own? I got this? And did...
No, because what? You have to understand it. It doesn't matter. Let's say I don't sell it. We're not fucking change anything. I will continue anyway. I sell 20 of them. Same shit. I will continue regardless. So the only thing that changes is maybe I have a better car or a shittier car. That's it. Because that's what I will do with the money.
Yeah, that's... I do worse. So you're now making art. You're making your own art. At what point did you, a lot of your work surrounds around butterflies. So I'm going to, I'll ask a little bit. I normally don't ask too much about the direction of art, but yours is throughout the body of your work, filters around kind of butterfly imagery. So I'm a little curious about that. You're actually in a tougher position, right? Because you're working for this big, like at the time, probably turned into a pretty big machine, right? There was production and huge exhibits and these types of stuff. Like, how did you pry yourself away from that and make a name for yourself? And what was the process what was the breaking point where you said, I got to do this on my own? And how did you go about approaching building your own brand that separated you from that and that you took on your own thing?
I didn't give Thierry a choice. I fought him. I fought him every day. I forced his hand. I did things he didn't want me to do, but did it anyway, but in his face. I wasn't hiding anything. I just was doing it anyway. And if you're not happy, it's the same shit. But I started to try to do something that has nothing to do with, that looks like what I was doing with him, to keep it, the relationship easier. And then I started from scratch. I went in the street, I started to do graffiti again, I went on billboards, I did some stupid shit, I had a extinguisher, like paint stores in the street, like, I started like that, and then I see it as a study, like it's one step at a time, and without really thinking, just knowing that's what I want to do. And I know I want to go all the way up there, but I don't know what it's going to look like when I'm up there. But I don't care, quite to be frankly. I'm like, I need to get there for some reason. It's not important why.
But you just feel that you need. I know that feeling.
I don't feel. I have to. It's not a feeling. It's an affirmation. There's no doubt.
Awesome. And so now you're starting to sell your own art. You're doing graffiti in the streets. You're starting to make your own brand, separating your way. Where are we time frame wise? Like how many years ago, how many years back? Are we like pre-iPhone still? Are we post-iPhone? Like have we entered Instagram yet?
We have not really a good notion of time, but it's about 7 years, 6 years, yeah, 7 years. So it's the beginning.
It's the beginnings of Instagram. It's
like that time of Flickr. Kind of, remember?
Okay. I opened Flickr,
I can't remember. Yeah, that was, so maybe the start of Instagram. Yeah, Instagram, because I had Instagram. But it was, I don't know, 7 years ago.
Okay. Now, so you start building your own thing, you start building your own brand. Back then, because this was like still pre-internet, like were you rep by galleries? Like what were your... like sales, like how did you build your audience and your sales channels? Like I see you do big installations. I've seen you've done restaurants. I've seen you do big street work. Like what was your process for building that? Obviously you had a little bit of advantage because I assume you had relationships from all the time with Terry, but what was the, like, how did you go about building your brand and your business?
So at the studio that I was using with Thierry, because I had my own studio, but I was not supposed to use it for my shit, but I will come at night and do my shit regardless. So I had that, which is a big plus for other artists that don't have that. And then, my vision was to get known and respected as a street artist and graffiti artist. I'm not the best graffiti artist. I'm not the best street artist. Doesn't matter. To me, it was more like, listen, I'm doing this. I'm serious about it. LA is my town. I'm going to hit the street, go on billboard, do this, do that on freeway and shit like that. I just want to prove that I'm not a joker. I'm not fake. I'll take the risk. I'll go to jail. I'll do all that shit. Give me the respect. And that's all I want. And then, so I was thinking of pushing it, do that. And then when the time, and then I was not thinking about selling anything, to be honest with you. I didn't really care at that time. Now I care about it because I need to run my business. But if that wasn't that, I don't give a shit.
Like making, because you like creating, because you like creating.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and so basically the tipping point where really I had to start to get Gary's because, and this is because of Thierry, because when I witnessing where we went through with Thierry, when I'm like, I want to do a show. So obviously I want to do a big show like he did, a big show to start, which is not the
same thing.
So I rented that big giant mansion in Koreatown. But like an old mansion, like fucked up mansion, like a haunted mansion. And I threw out a solo show there. I started creating artwork and I did my whole universe and my whole thing. And then I ended up with a lot of artwork and I'm like, I need to place them. So I need to start working with Gary because I don't know what I'm going to do with all that stuff.
And so did you reach out to the galleries or did you like, how did you foster that relationship with those people? Like, one of the things we talk about on the, like,
I had help on the brainwash side that already have a relationship with Gary's and they start to show my work
right.
to Gary's that they were working with. And when Gary started to take some artwork and they sell one piece and then they sell two pieces and then another Gary sell one, sell two, and then nothing. And then he builds up and it takes a long ass time.
Yeah. That's, I think the lesson here, because one of the things I try to get through the podcast for people, like, because everyone has a different path to how they were able to start selling their art at some sort of scale. And the end of the day, relationships, like who is just as important as what, if not more important than what you know. And if you're fortunate enough to be in a position to have relationships that help, I used to own fancy nightclubs in New York City for a long time. So my network is also like very big and complex. And that's why I know people like Terry and other things just because of my weird relationships. And I've been able to build a career out of that as well. So I understand that completely. So you had mentioned before, now you just want to make money because you need it to run your business, right? So let's talk about the business for a second. Are you at the point now where you have employees? Do you have production assistants? Is there like a team involved? What does that team look like? And how did you get to the point to realize you needed one?
I do a lot myself from the beginning. So I always, it took me time to hire people. Now I have two people. I have a personal assistant. She do mostly like emails and like computer stuff and like phone call organizing things, invoice, talking with Gary, with things like this. Then I have another personal assistant that do mostly labor, like building like canvases and stuff. They help me for things that I cannot do everything by myself anymore. And then I have some freelance that do sales for me. It's a small train, but I have other obligations aside from the business that make that everything becomes heavy.
Yeah, when you support other people's, when you have to pay salaries, it's hard.
Oh, salary, ex-wife, kids, houses,
all those. I'm going to ask a bunch of different questions. First, like, how much stuff are you like physically producing? Do you produce are we talking a piece a day, a piece a week, like what's the level of output that you're doing, and how do you go about? Say again?
No, I'm listening. How do I go about?
And do you produce because you're like, oh, I need to fill inventory for these six galleries, or do you produce just to produce, or do you come up with ideas, create them, and then what is the creation versus kind of business as that pendulum swings back and forth? What does that look like? Like, how does which one lead? Does one lead the other? And if they do, which one leads which?
No, I can produce a lot quick and then I can produce nothing. And for a while, I just, let's say when I have an idea, I put it to process right away. I don't have any patience when it comes to that. So as soon as I have something in my head and I want to do it, I can't wait. I do it right away, which is wrong because I don't leave enough space to do. I'm new to TikTok, so it's really hard to build a
following on TikTok.
And that's my dog. Give me a second. All right. And that looks like a good boy. Oh my goodness. It's my dog, Elvis.
Love it.
So yeah, now TikTok. I try. It's really for youngsters. Like they really get it better than I do, but try my best. In terms of selling,
do this, man.
In terms of selling, I think it's 70-30%, 70% gallery, 30% direct.
And so so you're primarily gallery.
Yeah.
And do you get most of the 30 that's not gallery that's inbound, does that come via like Instagram? Does that come via like relationships? What does that look like? Is that like people just messaging you saying, oh my God, I need to have this?
Yeah, 20% is Instagram, 10% is connection. Yeah. Yeah, when it comes to the online sale, it's mostly Instagram, yeah.
Okay. And do you spend, I guess my next question is like how much time, you've obviously brought in some assistants that help you with a bunch of stuff. How much time of your work week is spent doing art versus the businesses of art, like filming content, doing everything that's not art production?
I think the bigger you get, the less you make art. Because you're too busy. Like you're constantly on the phone. Because I have also a side hustle. I have an NFT project. I'm into digital art too. Like that's something I develop heavily. And that takes a lot of my time too. So yeah, unfortunately, sometimes it's good because when you do only art, you get lost. It's good to feel the need. Fuck, I need to stop. I want to do something. I want to paint. You know what I mean? It gives you a reason to be hungry to make art. Before it's something else. Now it's just, I never fucking get time. I want to make time for art. I don't know.
Got it. It gets harder and harder. Now you said you do digital art. So were you part of the whole NFT craze? Did you catch that early, middle, late?
I catch it late, but I didn't let it go like everybody. I catch it late, but instead of everybody, I went even more heavy on it, especially now. But now I'm building something strong. I can't say everything about everything's going on, but I definitely will put myself as a big player when it's going to rebound. I'll be fucking ready and I will have something really legit and strong. And I have already like a nice project that has strong bones and is doing well, but like financially, yeah, I missed it, but it's okay. It's all right. Not a big deal.
Yeah. I caught a little bit of it, but it was early and still missed it. So trust me, I feel worse because I was there before it all started. And I was like, in fairness, at the beginning, I didn't believe, like, they never believed in digital art until it was too late. So
it's never too late. Never too late. Right now, it's actually
That's for sure. Now's the building time, as they say, to make sure you. Yeah, I'm just starting to work. I'm trying to teach myself Blender. So don't do that. It's hard. So can you talk about what you're doing in terms of, like when you look at your digital art, is it in conjunction with your real world art or is this kind of its own thing? And like, how do you look at it from like a business perspective? Do you look at it as an additional revenue driver? Do you look at it as authenticity for your real art? Like what's the connection for you, if any?
I think it's a mixture of everything. I think that first, for me, it's definitely the next thing, the next movement into the art history. I always believed in digital art being the next step. I had no knowledge about crypto and Web3. And I'm not savvy like this. So I'm not, I didn't go to school so much. But instinctively, and with my instinct, after street art, and I thought she was starting to be really lame and everybody was trying to be street art and celebrity try to do street art and it became too mainstream. I often thought that's why I started to do 3D in my installation in the street because I wanted to bring another element. And then I felt that after the three-dimensional element, it had to be digital and to develop other sense. But I didn't knew about the NFT, the crypto, the Web3. I heard about it, but I wasn't into that. And then when I started being into crypto first, I made money with Dogecoin actually. And I thought it was fascinating. And I started to get into the crypto. And then some people that approached me to do a PFP project, an NFT project. And then I started to research it. But we started late and we took our time with it. And because I wanted to do it right, and I wanted to do it nice. And then when we ended up to the mint day, it was really when everything was collapsing. But because of that, I got to change partners. So one was a bad partner because he was only drive by money. The two other one, they were just lacking vision and knowledge. But in all fairness, if the project was very successful financially, I know they would have worked on it, try to learn more stuff and things like this and be fully involved in the project. But whatever. So I tried to keep the project. I brought in new people. And now I have a very beautiful panel of advisor, people that are like professional in the Web3, legit people. Like we're talking about like people you couldn't even speak to a year ago. And this is the beauty of today's market is that you can reach out to anyone because the market is crap. So they all have their open ears, open-minded. So I took advantage of that. And now I have a really nice panel of people around me that support the project and that really help us like grow. And then other things on the side are coming in the plate. And I think it's a fantastic thing, the digital artwork. And I think we didn't even scratch the surface of it. I think NFT is just like an introduction. Unfortunately, I had a bad publicity because of fucking asshole scammer that if they listen and see us, go fuck yourself. And they're like low fucking shitty life. People that scam other people. I'm just going to say it again because they really bother me.
Yeah.
It's fucked up. But yeah, I'm so revolted with this shit. I tell you why, because Web3 and NFT, it's an open door for everybody that don't necessarily have the resources that rich people have, connected people have, or none of that. You can literally be in India, Africa, fucking Antarctica, behind your computer and do some NFTs and get revenue out of it. And I think it's so.
Yeah, and I think it created so many more art collectors, like it democratized the world of art, and it got so many people to realize that art and being creative, like that was a real avenue for kind of life and direction, which is, I think is substantially a net positive. Like I'm super bullish on, I'm still super bullish on the space and think we'll see 10 more iterations of it before it goes. Is digital art like a big financial percentage, or is it something you're building and working towards because you believe it's going to be something that's the future?
Right now, it's something that costs me a lot. That's not something that I make money. That's something that I invest, and that costs me a lot of money. So eventually, and I hope so, I will bring some revenue. But for me, it's to be there and to be active in the space as an artist, and I want to play my role as an artist.
And that's how you know your passion is, figure out where you're spending your money. Question for you. Do you sell... Your work has a pretty decent price point. Like
it's all right.
Most of your work is what, in the $5,000 to $20,000 range, give or take?
Yeah, more. It can be more. Let's not be fancy.
Do you
middle range $15,000? There you go.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a very specific customer. Yeah. But it's a specific customer who's buying that work. Do you look at, and I'm sure just because you have a zillion followers, you have a big fan base, do you ever do prints or do you do other things to capture different segments of the market? Do you go and you're trying to capture a digital section of the market? Do you do like lower type things that like people who might be your fans but can't afford your work? Is there like a starting place for stuff, or do you not care about that segment?
It's not that I don't care. It's just that's boring for me to do that, but I've done it to try, but I don't put any much effort into it. So it doesn't do well. Like I never do it. I never really sprint. I don't really care for it, to be quite frank with you. So but sometimes I love to give some people like free stuff and whatever. I always have like goodies. Every time you go to my studio, you always come back with something. But I'm going to be pushing more. Be honest with you, I'm working on that, pushing more like products, not fashion. I want to do more fashion. I want to do more like I started a new page called I Want to Customize Things. it's an answer to go where I want to be in the future when it comes to that, but I definitely want to get there. But so far, no, everything I made is by selling painting and installation so far.
So that brings me perfect segue. So you've done like a bunch of large installations, and I've seen you do restaurants and like other big things. How do you find them? Do they find you? Is it a combination of both? What is your, like, how do you get into doing like some of these installs? Are the things you apply for? Like, how do you go about it?
They come to me. They come to me.
They come to you.
They come to me. The thing is, what I do is unique when it comes to the installation, but there's not many other artists that do three-dimensional artwork on walls. And
just so the viewers and the listeners understand, you do like big street art murals where you build like physical, like you build like an extension, similar to the way your work extends in a 3D fashion. Your physical work extends from the walls to like, almost as if it's coming out of the walls, right?
Yeah, it's a butterfly coming out of the wall, flying around. Like, it just gives more life to it, energy and a character. Yeah, so it's, let's say that out of 10 artists, if they're looking for an installation, a mural, let's say, they have 9 that are like a design flat on the surface, and they have one guy that do 3D shit. So if they're into that, like, it'll be easier for them to vouch for me. It's not like you have a guy that do a 3D flower and another guy that do 3D cars and 3D. It's just the guy that do the 3D butterfly. But anyway, yeah, so far. Yeah. I know there's already a couple guys that try to do what I do, the same way I do, one in Colombia and one in Greece. But I guess it's a compliment.
They say imitation is the best form of flattery.
There you go.
So the people come to you to do these installations, and do you usually negotiate the terms of the installation, or do you have someone else do it?
Both. Either it's the gallery, either it's my agent, or either it's me. You know, usually, yeah, it depends. Like, a lot of it is custom, and a lot of it, it's a long conversation with the owner of places and things like this, because most of business, hotels, things like this that I did, it was direct with me, because like it's a whole like conversation with them. They have a concept, they expect something. It's not easy to convince a business owner to do what I do, even if they come to me, because of the price, it's expensive, because of permits, because of liability, there's many components that comes in places. So it's a long conversation back and forth that a gallery in the middle, like, they'd be like, fuck, ask their artist directly, you know? But so with gallery, it's more like with clients directly are doing their own, and that's easy conversation. They want that, how much, okay, and they deal with it, yeah. But I try to be respectful to the gallery I work with. You can't, as an artist, like, galleries are your partners. Like, it's important to acknowledge that. You can't use the gallery, sell your artwork, and then you on the side selling, like, for 50% less. It doesn't work that way. So even when I have a client that comes directly with me. My first question is, where you come from? Okay, let's say LA. How did you hear about me? Oh, I was driving by Art Angel. I saw you painting in the gallery. Okay, cool. Here's the contact of the gallery. You can ask them anything, and I make sure they could take good care of you. Things like this. I saw you on Instagram. I've been following you. I love your work, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. What do you want? And then we create a conversation. But they're going to get the same pricing that a gallery. So it's... Right, yeah. I'm not gonna lie, they might get to 10%, but Gary does the same shit. But you gotta be straight with your numbers, because if not, you'll work for a couple of years, but then nobody is gonna want to work with you.
Now, when you have your galleries, are they segmented geographically? Like, yeah. How do you do it so there's not overlap? Because I know you're represented by like half a dozen galleries. How do you go about determining? How do you go about determining which galleries to work with, and how do you keep the lines separate? This is your area, this is your area.
It's common sense. You're going to have only one gallery in LA. I'm not going to have two. I'm going to have one. It's in your advantage that your galleries are happy to work with you. It's a partnership. You want to do everything you can to help your gallery sell your artwork, and they're going to do everything to help facilitate selling your artwork. If you don't take this as a collaboration, I know a lot of artists, they hate galleries and they're against it and they're very difficult with them. Like they're difficult when it comes to custom work and blah, blah, blah. And they have the big ego and all that bullshit. And fine. But I believe that if anyone's going to sell your artwork, you need to give them the respect and do everything you can to help them out.
Yeah, it's interesting because I through this podcast, I talk to like different types of artists, different levels of artists. I talk to artists because a lot of them, there's a whole generation of artists now that just owns their, that lives through social channels and just owns their customer and drives their business and doesn't need the notoriety of the gallery and gets enough traction from social channels where they 80, 90, 100% of their work that way.
Yeah, but let me...
Then there's other people who are... Yeah.
No, I want to say on that. Yeah, you're right. I know people that will sell everything on their own. They will control their market. They will control their clientele. I think it's a big, giant mistake. And I think it's when you have your ego that's too big and you think you can do everything on your own and you're better than everybody else. Because to be honest with you, a gallery is a professional. They sell art. That's what they do. They do it well. They have clients. They have a network. They have things like that. You got to respect them. Because if you take them away from the market, it's going to be great for the artist, but artists they're the worst at selling their art. We should never sell our own art. It's a job. It's a work. You have to be a pro. So let everybody be pro at what they do. You know what I mean? It's a good thing if a gallery sell your artwork. And quite frankly, those artists that sell on their own, they don't have access to same clientele that a gallery has. They think they have, but they don't. The big collector, they buy to their gallery. They have like a respectful engagement with the gallery. I know clients, they will buy art only by this gallery and only. Then they can ask to meet the artists and things like this. That's a different story. But I just feel like it's a mistake. That's my opinion.
Sorry.
Now, in terms of, so you do a lot of the gallery. Do you depend on the gallery to do a lot of your marketing PR, or is that something you handle in-house, or do you work hand in hand? Like, how do you go about marketing yourself?
So that's the thing. Gallery do very minimum marketing now these days. They rely on the artist. It's the upside down of the social media. Most gallery, they build their own social media, but building up an artist, it's rare. Beside some gallery, like you look at Eden Gallery, for instance, they build up the marketing and social media on their artists. But there's a big reason behind this. They're like the biggest fucking pimp in the market. They buy out. Those artists have no freedom. They can go nowhere. Alec Monopoly can do shit. He's under contract. He's making that much money and that's it. Maybe do things on the side. And it's his choice and I respect that. Don't get me wrong. I think Alec Monopoly has a phenomenal career. And it doesn't have to be a test or whatever. But the guy is a hustler and doing a great career. But he decided a path to work with a gallery that say, listen, we're going to take care of you. We'll promote you. We'll market you. And that's how we'll do. And that's like old school, actually. That's how what gallery used to do 50 years ago. Yeah. But most of all the gallery, they don't work like that. Most of the other gallery, they have like many different artists and they rely on the artists to do their own promotion and things like this.
So we're getting close to the end. By the way, this has been utterly fascinating. Your background, your history has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Through your career, I always try to ask people both sides of the coin. What do you think if you had to do it over again, what was your biggest mistake that you wish you could undo? And on the other side of that, what do you think was like the best decision you ever made, like the greatest achievement for kind of your art path? Do you have the best and the worst?
The best decision was to coming to the U.S. That was the best decision.
Okay, go America.
Yep.
By the way, you're the American dream, right? You were literally like the art version of the American dream.
Proud of that. That was the vision coming in. The mistake, I don't have, because for me, mistakes are learning experience. So if you don't have them, you don't learn, you're missing. No, I don't regret anything, to be honest with you.
By the way, I love that answer.
Thank you.
But you're right. It's all this creativity comes from failure. The majority of the best artwork I've ever made was me trying to make something else and screwing it up. And the thing I screwed up turned out to look better than the thing I was trying to make. So I'm a big believer in failing forward. I guess the next question is, what do you have planned next? Do you have anything, any big shows coming up? Do you have any big exhibitions or a new series of work that you've been playing with? What's on the horizon?
My biggest focus is digital work right now.
Okay.
Burning stuff. And
now, are you doing the digital work yourself, or do you like have a third party that helps that you art direct, and or do you like physically do all the actual digital work?
Both.
Okay.
I don't do the animation and all that stuff, but now, so everything that has to do with my NFT project, my PFP, the Punk Angels project, I hire like graphic designer that do animation, that specialize in that stuff that I direct.
Okay.
And quite frankly, it's too much work to learn this shit. And it's not for me. And I don't want to, I'd rather collaborate with graphic designer and things like this, and why not? And then for the new stuff, I'm actually finding ways to create digital artwork, but with ways that I can be an actor in it and in building it and using tools that are more easy for me to use. So yeah, I'm involved in it enough.
What sort of tools?
To like work with guys that are like fucking amazing at doing animation, 3D stuff and whatever. Like for me, there's no rules. I haven't hired anyone in particular to create animation on my future stuff.
Have you started playing with any of the AIs yet, or have you experimented with them at all? With AIs, like the artificial intelligence?
That stuff. No, because it all looks the
like
same.
Like DALL-E and...
Yeah, it's not my thing. For now.
Okay, just asking.
Not now.
Now, when you're going to release this digital art, are you going to release it on one of the curated kind of networks like the Nifties of the world, or are you going to just release it yourself because you have a big enough audience?
No, I can't tell you who, but I can tell you it's huge. It will be too much of a small world to describe the company that we're talking about, and it'll be with them.
Okay, amazing. Fantastic. I wait with bated breath to see what comes of this.
Yeah, I'll be
just so
expected.
All the people here. Good. I can't wait. What is the best way for people to find you? So
Instagram.
If someone listens to this and hears this, like, where, say again?
I just go on Instagram, Punk Me Tender.
Okay. So Punk Me Tender everywhere, the easiest place to find you.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Or find an email, whatever. When people, they want to know, they're fine. You know?
Yeah, of course. I love it. I'm once again super excited to have had this chance to talk to you. Next time I'm in LA, I'm going to come knock on your door and check out the studio. I can't wait to see the digital art that's coming our way. And I've been following your career for a while. And now that I finally actually did the research and kind of know the whole history, it's like I'm that much more enthralled and intrigued by everything. I will be a fan for a long time in the future.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, fantastic interview. And that's it. I'm glad you were ballsy enough to sell some art.
All right.
Beats plumbing.
All right. All right, you have a good day then.